the question was asked, being that tzarot, difficult situations, bring us close to Hashem, is there a way to do it without a tzara? So let me tell you a story. A guy had a baby girl. He was married. After a year, they were blessed. They had a daughter. He came to Rav Chaim Shmulevitz and he said, "Rebbe, I'm making a kiddush this Shabbos. I want Rebbe to come. I had a baby girl and I want to know if Rebbe could come to the kiddush." So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz said to him, he said, "I'm willing to come to the kiddush on a condition. If you make it a very fancy, beautiful, delicious kiddush, I'm willing to come. If you're making it a simple kiddush, then no." So the guy was taken aback. And he said, "Rebbe, but why?" So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz looked at him and said, "Let me paint a picture before you. Imagine you got married. And the first year, you didn't have a child. And the second year, you didn't have a child. And the third year, you realize you're not having a child, so you start having fertility treatments. And your day and night are revolving around going to doctors, and the first doctor can't help you, and the second doctor can't help you. And now your marriage is suffering, and your happiness is suffering, and you're married already 6 years, and you find yourself without children. And you're starting to wonder, will you ever have a child? And you start researching what fertility expert could help you in your situation, and you undergo all these tests till the point where you feel you're a guinea pig, you're an object of the professor's experimentation. And year after year bears no fruit but sorrow. And after 20 years of pursuing every type of expert and every type of treatment, alternative treatment, conventional treatment, everything that existed under the sun, you and your wife, who have suffered terribly, you finally have a baby girl. What kind of kiddush would you do?" So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz said, he said, "Look, Hashem saved you 20 years of agony. You think you should thank him any less?" I heard this story when there was a child who was handicapped, and a friend of mine who headed many organizations, many tzedak organizations, aside from his own business that he ran. He was a representative of a girls' orphanage from here in Israel, and he was head of another tzedak organization in the U.S., and he called this kid's parents and he said, "You know, I realize you guys are having trouble taking him to school every morning. Maybe I could take him in the mornings. I'll come by and I'll help him with the walker and I'll help him in the car and I'll help him out to school and I'll do it on my way to work." So the parents weren't sure, like, what does he have in it? Why is he offering this? It was a big help for them. But they asked me to ask him. So I met him and I asked him, "Tell me, you know, they're trying to understand what's behind all of this." So he said to me, he said, "Thank God I have 7 healthy children. This child's parents have to do much more than take him to school every morning. They got to help him when he comes home. They got to help him 24 hours a day. Other than the time he's in school, they got to be there for him. So I figured, you know, I have to thank Hashem for the fact that, Baruch Hashem, I have 7 healthy children. So I have to try a little bit to feel the appreciation of what Hashem gave me in my life. So I said, let me just take him in the morning. That's a very small thing I can do to help me appreciate what Hashem gave me in life." That was, and then he told me the story of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. That's where I heard the story. I still remember the gas station we were standing at as we were having this conversation. He was filling his car. So there are two approaches, I think, that one can take. One approach is an approach of fear. Meaning a person can start thinking about Gilad Shalit. A person can start thinking about any person that falls into enemy's hands and how, you have no guarantee, you know, anytime I stop a taxi, I look in the back seat. And the drivers always ask me, "Is anyone else coming with you?" And I say, "No." So they say, "Then why are you looking in the back seat?" And I say, "To make sure you don't have terrorists in the back." My cousin was kidnapped and murdered by terrorists. So before I enter a car, I always look in the back seat to make sure who's there. I don't. And if the windows are tinted, I won't approach. I won't go into the car. A person can scare himself and say, you know, a million bad things can happen to me, and he could spend each day in fear of everything that can happen, and out of that, he can drive himself to have more kavanah and be a better Jew. And that's a certain element of avodah meira. Or a person can work the other way, and a person can try to do avodah me'ava. A person can have appreciation for all the good things. And sometimes the two are not mutually exclusive, but complementary. They work hand in hand. I try to train myself that when I'm on the bus and I see a handicapped person, I try to make sure that the next time I say Pokeach Ibrim, Matir Asurim, the blessings in the morning that thank Hashem for the capacities, I'll say it with more kavanah. Rabbi Kiva Eiger, before he said those blessings, every morning would go to the local hospital, visit the sick from his community, and then he'd come to shul for shachris. He'd say, I have to remind myself every morning in order to have better kavanah. It was also part of his duty as the rabbi to visit the sick every day. But I don't know if he had to do it every day. When I was in elementary school, our principal, Rav Flam, of blessed memory, that's what he told us. He told us that Rabbi Kiva Eiger would start his day in the local hospital, and he said that was the way he could have kavanah. Otherwise, we walk around, do we really appreciate that we have the capacity to walk? We see, do we have the appreciation for that capacity? We take everything for granted. Even our clothing we take for granted. We take it all for granted. So a person has to try and train himself to have appreciation. At the end of the day, most people are not as successful without a tzara, and we find that even the giants of Jewish history became better people through difficulties. And Chazal say, Hashem hit three giants in world history. Hashem hit Eov, and he yelled. Hashem hit Aaron, and he was quiet. Hashem hit David, and he sang a song of praise. Only David reached the level where he could say, Odecha Hashem ki anafta bi. I thank you, Hashem, because you punished me. I know it's for my benefit. Only David was on that level. It's a level we aspire to. It's a level we discuss. But the Talmud seems to say that when it actually happens, to be able to say it with a smile and say, thank you, Hashem, that was only David. We all have a bracha baruch dayan emet, but it's not so easy to say it with the same kavanah as baruch hatov amitiv. But we try. We try. And that's where a good book of hashkafa and a good book of musar and thought. A person who comes to davening and spends a few minutes beforehand thinking. A person should have a list. What am I going to talk to Hashem about? If we invest time and think about it in advance, and we walk into davening like normal human beings, and we treat it with the proper respect, and we make sure that we don't have things distracting us, there aren't any cell phones ringing, we're not busy doing a million other things, but we're focused, so then we stand a chance at advancing in this direction. It's important also to know that big people daven long Shmona Esrei. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach would daven 15 minutes when he davened the Shmona Esrei, because you got a lot to talk to God about. What's the rush? How are you going to succeed without it? Yes?
Wasn't David punished for asking God to challenge him more?
That was to challenge, but when the punishment actually came, he said thank you, and that was greatness. We don't ask to be challenged, but to be able to look at, he lost a son, he was chased, he got leprosy, he was punished from every direction. And
he wanted more challenge.
There was one point in which he had a conversation with Hashem, and he asked Hashem, how can I be like the patriarchs? And Hashem said, they stood up to challenges. And he said, okay, Hashem, challenge me. And that was a mistake, and he did tshuva for that mistake.
Why was that a mistake?
Because we don't ask for challenges. Life is difficult enough without it. We don't ask for challenges. On the other hand, when a person is suffering, it's not a question of a challenge. It's a question of, David HaMelech was punished, he was hurting. Over that hurting, he was able to look at it and have the clarity and the presence of mind and not to be put down to the point where he could actually say, I thank you, Hashem, for hurting me. Not for challenging me, for hurting me, for the punishment, for having to contend with these hardships. But that's a great level, you know. We're talking about saying it and meaning it, not just saying the words. David was on that level. I have to tell you that I have to think more about your question. I'm not sure if I answered your question in entirety. I have to think about it a little more. Just 1 second. You want to bring in the pizza? You'll give it out? Yeah? Okay. Bamatafa.
Examples we give examples of people that are using a mitzvah to remind of themselves, like Bikur Cholim, just to improve their kavanah. So we can improve our kavanah and we can improve, realize ourselves just by sitting down and talmud. Or maybe.
It's part of it. Usually it's not as effective.
Or maybe, what they call it, talmud and. You get to meet up for
Bodidut.
So. Examples you gave for me were not so clear. How come can we mishtamesh a mitzvah and just improve our kavanah? Why help a handicapped person if we can do ba'ava instead of saying, God, I really need to appreciate you gave me 7 and a half kids? You know, there are handicapped people. For sure, this is like organizations. You met a lot of people with those kind of problems. Why not get help in order to realize that, okay, I've said I'm.
I think that there's always a difference between when you sweat doing something and you learn about sweating doing something.
You're not doing a mitzvah for the sake of it, you're doing a mitzvah in order to get something from it. Is it a mitzvah though?
I think it's a mitzvah, and I think that there's dual kavanah. He's doing it for the sake of the mitzvah, and he's doing it also as a way to be able to do other mitzvot better, to have better appreciation for his creator. And I don't think it's contradictory. You could have both. It's like a guy who's teaching Torah and he's getting paid for it. You're going to say, that's it, he's not doing a mitzvah, he's just he's doing a job. No, he's doing a mitzvah, and he's doing a job. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that every person should take a tithe, a tenth of his time, to learn with someone who's weaker than him. Doesn't have to be a guy who's 10 levels weaker than you, but someone who will benefit from it. You have to, just like you take a tenth of your money and give it to tzedakah, you have to take a tenth of your time to help others with learning Torah, a tenth of your learning time. So that could be a chavrusa that knows a little bit less than you. So I once asked my teachers, I said, are you allowed to get paid for that time? This time that you're tutoring and getting paid, does that count too? So they said, yes. It's not, the two don't contradict. You have to learn with someone who knows less than you. You could also get paid for that time. Doesn't contradict. On this point? No? Okay.